This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott, and if we got a great show for you tonight, no, we don't. The phone is ringing again. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, east of the Rockies. Hey, breather. Good to hear from you, man. What's going on? You've got a case of the holiday blues? I'm sorry to hear that, breather. Maybe you should get out more. Maybe this whole perverted breather shtick isn't working out for you. It's Christmas. Don't you have any friends and family? What do you mean you told them to subscribe to our podcast and now they won't speak to you? Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on? Mistress for Christmas? AC/DC? You got it. All right, buckle up, gang. The subject of our rock and roll autopsy tonight will be Mistress for Christmas by Aussie rock legends AC/DC. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
Here's another Q102 concert event.
Live and loud. Friday, July 29th at Civic Auditorium, AC/DC. Brace yourself for a rock and roll super shock. AC/DC. And special guest White Lion. Tickets to the Civic Auditorium, all Homer's Records, Yonkers Ticket Centers, Pickles, Ticks, or charge at 402-342-7107. Friday night, July 29th. The Mega Shock, a contemporary presentation. AC/DC.
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching? I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
All right, gang, we've got our intrepid rock and roll autopsy beat reporter on the line, Rico Blitzer. Like Donner and Blitzer.
How's it going, man?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty good. Are you getting ready for Christmas? Are you done with your shopping?
Yeah, it's all done. It's in the can, man.
Wow, you got the hay is in the barn, right?
The hay is in the barn. Listen, Rico.
Yeah.
You are the finest newsman in the biz today.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
But I'm thinking we just skip the news tonight. It's Christmas.
Yeah. It's not a bad idea. Like, we all need a night off once in a while, right?
Yeah. I mean, we don't need any heavy news tonight. We don't need to hear about, you know, Keith Moon shagging broads and throwing them off balcony windows.
Or how many famous people get away with drug possession charges.
Yeah.
And crazy shit like pulling guns on cops and getting away with it. We don't need any of that tonight.
We don't need that shit. We don't need Jerry Lee Lewis banging 10-year-old cousins tonight. Do we need that during what is Christmas be about that?
Christmas is not about banging 13-year-olds. It's about the Christmas spirit, Scott. It's about friends and family and sharing and making somebody else happy.
Indeed.
With
Let's share our favorite holiday Christmas tunes. How about that for an idea?
I think that's a phenomenal idea. So, well, why don't we, like we typically do with our lists, you have three, I'll have three, and then we'll just let it rip. You want to do one at a time? Like, you go, I go, you go, I go?
I love it. Let's do that. Let's
do it, man. Rock, paper, scissors. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
Why don't you go first, Rico?
All right. So the three that I have tonight, I didn't want to overthink this too much. I thought about these three, and before I overthought it, I thought about it one more quick time to make sure. So these are just three of my favorite Christmas songs that just over the years have just stuck in my head for some reason or another. I guess in no particular order. I think the first one I'm going to talk about tonight is, and the first time I saw this was the video that was on MTV in the early 80s. It was during Christmas time. And when I was younger, when I wasn't out doing stupid shit, I was an avid MTV watcher. And so during Christmas time, ooh, beauty. That is always in the Christmas spirit, by the way. The video of David Bowie and Bing Crosby doing Little Drummer Boy / Peace on Earth. For some reason, the first time I saw that video, that song has always just been one of my favorite Christmassy tunes of all time. I just love it. It's the one thing that I kind of like about it. It's nowadays we call these mashups. But back in the day, they called counterpoint, where you have one person singing one song and another person singing another song at the same time. What we now call mashups. They weren't called mashups back then, but they were done often. They were done in the, what would you say, Scott? Like in the 40s and 50s, where that kind of thing was popular, right?
Yeah.
Back in the Gene Kelly, Bing Crosby, when those guys were at the top of their game, right?
Good pull.
And so, yeah, dude. So, they were doing a Christmas special. Here's the funny thing about this. They were doing a Christmas special, and so David Bowie stops by. They arranged this thing between the two of them, and they were going to do the only song they were going to do is Little Drummer Boy. And David Bowie's like, I don't really want to sing that because I don't think it really showcases my voice that much. And so this is the interesting part about this. So the producers and the writers of the show like left the room for about an hour or two. And the other song, what they call the Peace on Earth song, like they wrote that in about an hour.
Right.
So they went out in another room. They wrote the song in about an hour, came back and said, hey, try this out. Everybody liked it. They rehearsed it. They did it in counterpoint. And that was it, man. So that's my first song. It's always stuck in my brain. I always thought that the combination of Bing Crosby and David Bowie was super interesting. That's like something you would never think of in a billion years. One more quick funny story about this. When he shows up with his wife. They were both dressed alike. He had makeup and earrings on and his hair was bright red. And they were like, no, man, we can't have that. So he changed his clothes and kind of toned it down a little bit, and the rest is history, man. I think that's a great rendition of Drummer Boy, and throwing in Peace on Earth just really wraps it up nicely. So that's my first song.
Yeah, great choice. You know, it's funny with me with Christmas songs, because I really have a love-hate relationship, not just with holiday music, but the holiday itself. There's some years I am just not in the mood for Christmas, and I'm like, can we just take a year off from this shit? Kind of a little bit like that this year, but I'm working on it. So for me, growing up, my dad was a huge Elvis fan, so I grew up on... Elvis had several Christmas albums throughout his career, most of them compilations that kind of contain the same songs. And sometimes there'd be different, you know, regional versions of these things and then they would have, you know, unique track listings. But there's one Christmas album that just the standard one that you know, I'm not even sure what it's called because there's so many different versions of it, but I just call it Elvis's Christmas album. And it's got Santa Claus is Back in Town and White Christmas and Blue Christmas. But on the version that I grew up with as a kid, it had Merry Christmas Baby on it, which is just a blues. And honestly, don't even know who did that track originally. But it's just a straight blues. Here we go. It's an R&B Christmas standard credited to Lou Baxter and Johnny Moore. So like everything Elvis did, it's, you know, it's a cover. But it's a great track. Super. It's just a straight blues. And it showcases Elvis's voice. And he's got his typical kind of like, you know, going on in there. just to put you in the Christmas spirit, you know. But yeah, that's going to be my first choice. Merry Christmas, Baby.
Yeah, that's a good choice, man. Could this be one of his more bluesy tunes, you think? I'm not going to say the bluesiest, but it's probably one of his bluesier ones, right? Even though it's Christmas, it still ranks up there, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that's a good call. Yeah, and another thing I like about this is it's not, I don't hear it over and over and over again this time of year. I've heard at this point now after Thanksgiving and we're just a few days before Christmas, I've heard all of them so many times. The fucking Sirius Holiday Channel, it literally is just a cycle. And you can tell whenever it starts over again. I mean, there's no deep cuts. They're just playing the same shit over and over again, you know? You hear the same ones on the radio. So I'm just kind of burnt on them. And Merry Christmas, Baby, and Your Choice, too, is one that you just don't hear so many times, you know?
It's mind-numbing. Just they have like the same 10 Christmas songs in rotation and they just do them over and to your point, there's so many great deep Christmas cuts that I would love to hear that you gotta go out and get them on whatever your favorite streaming service is. So yeah, man, right. Like they need to do a better job of that, I think.
So what do you got for number two, sir?
So number two for me way back would be, you know, when I grew up, you know, my mom was always, and well, my dad too, but he died when I was super young, so my mom kind of took over the mantle for the both of them. But my mom and dad were always super huge fans of like the birth of rock era, like, you know, the late 50s era rock. And I always grew up a big Chuck Berry fan. Saw him live actually in Cleveland. It was amazing. We were right at the front of the stage. A friend of mine, I may have told this story before, back when they had the Moondog, the second Moondog coronation ball in Cleveland, I think it was in the 80s. Well, we, the three of us, my mom and guy I grew up with, we actually were right, we were leaning on the front of the stage, and Chuck Berry was probably the same distance from my face to this microphone. We were that close. It was awesome. In fact, a friend of mine accidentally touched his guitar. That's how close we were while he was playing. So I always grew up a big Chuck Berry fan. And I always thought the song Run Rudolph Run, or otherwise known as Run Run Rudolph, super cool ass, you know, 12 bar blues, typical Chuck Berry, you know, song. I love it. It's pretty simple. I just think it's cool. And anything by Chuck Berry is going to have a hold a little place in my heart. And especially this one, it's just so quintessential him. And it's a cool ass Christmas song too. So that's going to be my second one.
Well, I grew up in a similar environment with my dad was, I mean, huge 50s rock. I grew up with Carl Perkins, Chuck Berry, Frankie Lane, the whole thing. So yeah, I can totally feel that. It is a great track, man. It's got all the Chuck Berry isms in it, the double stops, you know, it's all there. Yeah, it's a great choice, man. I'm gonna stick with Elvis, and it was funny because I was putting this list together, I'm like, I just thought for a minute I'm just gonna do three Elvis songs, but then I thought, you know what? I genuinely wanted to go with songs that were kind of special to me. And so I chose another one. It's technically not really a Christmas song, but it was always stuck on the Christmas compilations that I mentioned. And this one was on what's called the Pickwick edition, the Camden Pickwick edition of the Elvis Christmas album. And it was always the closing track. And it was the somber kind of reflective Elvis track called Mama Like the Roses. And we all know how Elvis, you know, was the ultimate mama's boy, right?
Oh, totally.
Yeah, and you know, it's always been portrayed that when his mom passed, that he never really recovered from that. So it's basically like a love letter to mom, you know, and it's even got like this. My brother and I have made fun of this for years. The little spoken word breakdown in the middle.
He's real good at that.
It's such an Elvis trademark, and it's so cheesy in a way because it's so earnest and kind of on the nose that it's not super poetic, you know, it's just cheesy in a way. And in a lot of ways, this song is almost like, I really think it's a beautiful song, but it's also for people who hate Elvis, it's everything about him that they hate. It's the real schmaltzy. The vibrato he applies is like on every word of every syllable of the entire song. It's almost like cartoonishly applied, the vibrato of every word. True. Did you listen to it by chance?
Yeah.
Did you pick up on that?
It's exactly what you said. It's everything you love about him. And conversely, it's also, he creates a caricature of himself at the same time. It's amazing. Yeah. It's the best.
That's a great way to put it.
It's such a soulful song, and you can tell he really puts his heart and soul into this thing. But again, if you look at it from a certain lens, it can be a little cheesy, but not at the time, dude. Can you imagine being like a fucking 16-year-old teenager girl listening to that song for the first time? You're like, you're just melting right there as you're listening to it.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It's almost as much a love letter to his mother as it is fried peanut butter and banana sandwiches. It's just that over the top and cheesy, but it's still in a weird way, it's got this beautiful sentiment to it. So it works in both ways. And so that's my choice. Number two, Mama totally liked the Roses.
One more quick question about that. Did he write that after she died or while she was still alive?
I'm not certain. Like everything else that he did, it was, a cover song written by someone else. And so, the wiki page here I have brought up says in 69 it was recorded, so that tells me that it was probably put on a later, like, posthumous Christmas album, Elvis Christmas album. But I'm not sure how that lines up with the death of his mom. I think his mom died before the comeback special in 68, I think, but yeah. I can't recall.
I was just wondering if maybe she was alive to hear his version of that, which I'm sure she would have loved because she loved everything he did. But
yeah,
anyway, so my number three is this goes into the category of like late 70s, early 80s rockers that make original Christmas tunes that I like a lot of them. But this one, for some reason, has always just stuck in my brain, and I never ever hear it. I have to look for it, but it's Christmas Is the Time to Say I Love You by Billy Squire. I remember,
it's a great choice.
Yeah, man. Like, I remember watching this again. MTV is what made this song what it was. And one of the things that I love about this song, not only is the great slide guitar, but the other thing is in with him are all the MTV VJs and some other local radio DJs from New York all came in, and they all looked like they were having such a blast doing this song. And in fact, Martha Quinn, some people might not know who that is, but she's one of the OG MTV VJs, right? She said it was one of the best things that she ever did was that shoot with that song. She said they all had so much fun, and you could just tell that it was just, they all looked like they had a great time. And I've always been a big Billy Squire fan. I always liked his music. I know we maybe will talk about why he fell off the face of the earth someday.
Yeah.
I really would like to do that, but you know, the Stroke, and I mean, all of his stuff, I always liked him. And so when he came out with this song and watching the video and how much fun everybody looked like they were having, the song just always has stuck with me over the decades.
Yeah, great pull. You got to put Billy Squire on the list. Grab a song and put it on the master list now that we're totally thinking out loud about it. Yeah, I agree with you. I think Billy Squire is great. And that's another Christmas track that you never hear, so you're not like sick of it like all the others.
Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, I just maybe a couple of honorable mentions. I was going to talk about Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Carol of the Bells.
Mm-hmm.
But we all hear it 37,000 times between Thanksgiving and Christmas that I get tired of hearing it. Or the John Lennon one. So this is Christmas, that one. That's a great song, but we just hear it too much. And the Paul McCartney one, I like that one too. And there's others that I wanted to talk about, but just heard, I'm so burned out of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I came really close to selecting that John Lennon song. But ultimately, I'm like, I've heard that so many times that I tried to pick songs that I would actually listen to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Of my own choice. But yeah, that song, I kind of wanted to pick almost like an anti-Christmas song for my third. I thought for a moment about picking the Ramones, you know, It's Christmas. I don't want to fight tonight. But we had just recently talked about the Ramones and then I listened to the song again. I was like, yeah, it's good. But, you know, there's a million other Ramones songs I like so much better. So I kind of struggled with this third choice a bit. I thought I could just pick another Elvis song. I could just really easily. I genuinely love that Elvis Christmas record top to bottom. I love every track. I think the gospel songs he does on that record are beautiful.
Totally.
But for my third choice, I went with David Lee Roth, and he did a song that he released. He's released in his like this weird kind of zone he finds himself in post Van Halen. And this goes to technically when Van Halen was still functioning. Van Halen played their last date when Eddie was still alive in like 2015. And so this track he released in the Christmas of 2016, and the song is called Ain't No Christmas. And a lot of people, when they heard it, thought, well, this is David Lee Roth telegraphing that Van Halen is dead. And it makes me wonder if this doesn't line up with Eddie's, you know, cancer diagnosis, where he would basically at this point, at the release of this song, he has 4 years left in his life at this point. So David Lee Roth has gone on and released these singles, which is kind of smart. Nobody buys records anymore. And he's released like every couple of months, he's released just a song that he's had sitting in his vault. A lot of them he did with John 5. I don't know if John 5 plays on this one. It very well could be David Lee Roth playing on it, but it's a really somber and reflective David Lee Roth song. And it's funny because he's like the ultimate party guy back in the 80s, but he's very much writing music that's age appropriate as a guy who's almost 70. And I just think he's an excellent lyricist. He really knows how to turn a phrase, and this stuff where he's not straining his voice but doing almost like a Leonard Cohen thing, I think really works for him, you know. And I would be really happy if he continued to release music in this vein. It's almost a Bruce Springsteen kind of Ghost of Tom Joad kind of thing, where it's, you know, the semi-spoken word, kind of somber, lyrically driven, you know, music that he's been doing. And this Ain't No Christmas song is a super, super sad and reflective kind of David Lee Roth song. I just think it's really beautiful. And I was happy when he released it because I thought, oh man, I hope he does a whole album like this. But he's just continued over the last couple of years, just in dribs and drabs, just kind of put out these one-off singles, most of which I've thought have been really, really good. So yeah, Ain't No Christmas, David Lee Roth.
Yeah, I think that song is fantastic. I agree with you that I really feel like that. Even earlier in his career, I think this kind of stuff, because he plays a pretty good acoustic.
Yeah.
Maybe there's not a lot of people out there that know that about him, but Ice Cream Man, he's playing the acoustic on Ice Cream Man, I believe. But he plays the kind of acoustic that would be perfect for this kind of music. And to your point, the way he writes lyrics, he's a lot smarter than maybe people give him credit for. And he's really fantastic at doing that. And I agree with you 100%. I would love to hear more of this, because this, I really love this song. It's amazing. And I think he did a fantastic job of it, with it.
Yeah, and as a guy who's getting older, he's clearly looking back, you know. And it's funny, because Christmas for a lot of people is, you know, it's a fun time, but it can also be a sad time of year for people too, where they kind of feel heavy. And you can certainly, as you get older, sense the passage of time, and Christmases are a non-renewable resource. You only get so many of them, right?
That is true.
It's a terrific track.
Agree.
Let's come back, Rico, after a short break, and we'll continue our rock and roll autopsy holiday spectacular and talk about some AC/DC.
What? We'll be right back.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955. On this day, the birth of rock and roll gifted under the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm. A sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace, in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
The Autopsy Report.
All right, welcome back. This is our holiday edition Rock and Roll Autopsy, AC/DC. Wow, never would have put those two things together, right? But this is Mistress for Christmas off of the Razor's Edge album in 1990. Recorded in Windmill Lane Studios in Dublin and Little Mountain Sound in Vancouver, Ireland, and Vancouver. Man, they traveled a lot to do this one, I guess, right? The labels Albert Atco EMI, the producer Bruce Fairbairn. And yeah, dude, this is AC/DC's Christmas song. So Mistress for Christmas.
All right, gang, it's Rock and Roll Autopsy. It's AC/DC, Mistress for Christmas. We're going to put this mug through the ringer. We've got a scientific method. We've got five proven over the course of a year categories to determine whether or not this track killed rock and roll. They are gratuitous boomerism, excessive misogyny, wanton whiteness, malignant machismo, and culture vulturism. Rico, Mistress for Christmas, AC/DC. Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays. Gratuitous
boomerism. How do you score it?
Yeah, man. this is probably going to get a one for me. I want a Mistress for Christmas. Slip it on up, but we're going to get into perhaps some lyrics a little bit down the road, but and why this gets a one. But yeah, dude, this is, it's written by boomers, so that gets the obligatory one, right? So I mean, what do you have any other, you know, reasons why it shouldn't get a one? Because to me, it's just it's obvious that it should be that.
Well, I agree totally. At this point, I'm going to say in AC/DC's career, everything they do is going to be a one in gratuitous boomerism.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that, and I love AC/DC. I'm a huge AC/DC fan, but I am clear-eyed enough to realize that this is perhaps the most boomerific of all boomer bands. And it's only getting worse as time goes on and more of their songs show up in movies and Ford pickup truck commercials. They are always and forever from this day forward, henceforth, Rock and Roll Autopsy will score everything with AC/DC in it a one, period.
So yeah, that's getting set in stone. Anytime ACD is mentioned, automatic 1.0.
Category two, Rico, excessive misogyny. How do you score? And I've got the lyrics in front of me if you need them.
Yeah, why don't you hit me with some lyrics and perhaps we'll go from there.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the day. I just can't wait till Christmas time when I can roll you in the hay. This is verse one. Yeah. Easy come, easy go. Have a good time with lots of dough. Slipping up highs, slipping down low. Love them and leave them, on with the show. Now we're going to move into verse two here. Listen, I like female form in a minimum dress. Money to spend with a capital S. Get a date with the woman in red. Want to be in heaven with three in a bed. Goes on to the chorus. He got it. I want it. They got it. I can't have it, but I want it. It don't matter. She got it. I can't get it. I want a mistress for Christmas. And that's basically it. I'll just pump through to the very end.
That's what I was hoping that you would get to help me out with the last couple of lines.
The outro goes, I can hear you. Wait, it goes, I want a woman in red at the bottom of my bed, mistress for Christmas. The outro, I can hear you coming down my smokestack. I want to ride on your reindeer, honey, and ring my bells. Yeah.
Yeah. This isn't as simple as maybe when I first explored this category for this song, I thought it was going to be a little more straightforward than it wound up being for me. Because from one perspective, it's just, again, it's kind of like some of the other ones that we've done in the pad, the other songs. This is just a dude who says, listen, you're hot, babe. I want to smack that ass. Okay. Is there anything really misogynistic about that? About this should make a girl feel good about herself, right? It's not like I'm putting my you're under my thumb, bitch, and you are here to please me, and I don't care how you feel about it. Now, see, to me, that's more misogynistic. But in this case, isn't it just one dude saying, you're fine, man, and I want to get with that? But then we find out a little bit more about why the song was written. It's a song about Donald Trump. Angus Young came out and said, they wrote the song about Donald, because you got to remember in the early 90s, yes, you know, Donald, he was even on Saturday Night Live, I think, back then, like at least, yes, once or twice. And so he was like super high celebrity, dude. Yep. Everybody loved Donald Trump. He was, yep, he was just it back then. And they actually wrote this song about Donald Trump, which then flips it all on its head. And now I have to give it like a five instead of a one. If I could give it a five, I would. Unfortunately, I can't give it more than a one.
It's so. About a rich married guy who, because, yeah, of his wealth and power, can bed as many women as he wants to.
Exactly.
Wife or otherwise. Want to be in heaven with three in a bed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to give this. At the end is very important.
Yeah, it's really great when it's all written out in the lyrics too, all the yas and uhs. Yeah, I'm going to give it a one as well for excessive misogyny. Yeah. If nothing else, just the, if you just want to look at it from, if I can, and I can't because I've never lived a day of my life as a woman, but I would imagine that in the eyes of a woman, they're going to see some objectification happening in here. So,
totally.
So I'm just going to go ahead and score that a one as well. Let's move on to category three. Wanton Whiteness. Rico, Mistress for Christmas, AC/DC. How do you score, sir?
Yeah, man, this is getting a, maybe you're going to be a little surprised or maybe you won't. I'm not really sure, but this is going to get a zero out of me.
Interesting. Because,
yeah, I'm going to get a, this is okay. It's about a rich dude who just uses his wealth and power to get any female he wants and as many females as he wants, right? But is that inherently white? Like, wouldn't every dude from every culture be able to do that?
Sure, right? Yeah, and that's happened, right? We've seen that, you know.
It's my point. And so this isn't the desire to do this is not strictly a white bread thing, in my opinion. Like, every dude, no matter what color your skin is or what culture you come from, if you could do this, you're going to. I mean, that's a fact, man. And so that's why I give it a zero. Might not be, you know, might not be what you feel, but that's where I'm going with this.
Well, I'm going to respectfully disagree with your zero, and I'll tell you why. I'm going to take it from this perspective, and I think you make a good argument. I'm going to take it from a different perspective. I'm almost going to just pick on AC/DC here.
All right.
Because if I think about it, like with the gratuitous boomerism angle, where I've just decided from this point on, I'm always going to score everything AC/DC a one with gratuitous boomerism, I'm almost inclined to do so with whiteness as well. Because when I think of AC/DC fan, even back in 94, maybe especially back in 94, I think of Beavis and Butthead, you know, that's what they looked like. It's what I looked like, for Christ's sake.
Right.
And I think of mulleted, seas of mulleted men, you know, listening to the most basic crotch rock imaginable. And I just don't see a great deal of diversity from the audience perspective there. And so, and I just don't know that there ever has been with AC/DC. I don't think AC/DC set out to do that, but I just think they were embraced by the blue collar white guys who raised me. And so, and so I feel like that's their, the core of their audience. And so I feel like that's kind of where they're always going to set with me now. And it's only hardened as they've gotten on in the years. I feel like that's only become more and more kind of solidified as they're like corporate AC/DC now. AC/DC are almost like NASCAR now, you know,
I mean,
they're just like, they're just like a white guy brand, you know?
So let's just talk about that for a quick sec. So AC/DC didn't intend, I think we both agree on that. They didn't intend to wind up this America white man's, you know, pickup truck, Confederate flag in the back windshield type of a band, but they kind of wound up that way. They play, I mean, think about what they play is like super duper bluesy shit, right? Super ridiculous blues based stuff. That's interesting, man. All right. So you give them a one because they kind of wound up that way. I gotcha. I can't disagree with what you're saying at all.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I know we're supposed to be focusing on the song and not so much the band, but I can't really separate my perception of the band from the song itself. And at the end of the day, it's a, you know, to your point, it's a song the Young Brothers wrote about Donald Trump, because, and they thought it was the, I think the quote is Angus Young thought it was the funniest song on the record. These guys write songs they think are funny, you know, and oftentimes their sense of humor is really juvenile. But since Bon Scott passed and the Young Brothers, and for a while Johnson handled the lyrics, they write about what they think is funny. And oftentimes, and especially in recent years, it's just really teenage kind of stuff. And so, and I don't even know what I'm really trying to say other than that. I just don't know that they have, for as popular as they are. And I think they're one of the only bands that could headline like over Metallica or U2, like not now, but in the last like 20 years. Right. I mean, they're like that big globally. It's a huge band. Right. But even with as huge as they are, they have a limited kind of scope in terms of their audience, if that makes sense. And I'm kind of dancing around what I'm trying to say here, but do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think a major factor here, if you take a few of the AC/DC songs that we've talked about in the past, plus this one, plus some of the other ones that are part of the Brian Johnson era of AC/DC, and you just, in your brain, take out his vocals, insert Bon Scott's vocals, you get the humor is there again, you get a totally different vibe. This song is probably a fuckload funnier if it's coming out of Bon Scott's mouth versus Brian Johnson's mouth. Coming out of Brian Johnson's mouth, it's America, pickup truck, Confederate flags, right? Coming out of Bon Scott's mouth, it's that song's fucking hilarious, and yeah, I love it.
All of a sudden,
I think it's a like, difference between exactly. It's a difference between Bon Scott and Brian Johnson, in my opinion, anyway.
Wow, you really just kind of blew my mind with that, because I never really thought about that ever. That if you took, and Bon wrote his own lyrics, and at this point, by the Razor's Edge album, the Young Brothers had taken the lyric writing responsibility from Brian Johnson. So now Angus and Malcolm are writing the lyrics at this point. But your point really is interesting to me, because if Bon Scott is singing this song, you're right. That is a really smart observation, because then it becomes like cheeky kind of, you know, and I know Bon Scott wasn't an Englishman, but it becomes like cheeky English humor. It's almost like Benny Hill at that point. It just becomes like randy English humor.
Exactly. It's not like creepy, like creeper dude. that sits in the corner of the strip club that nobody ever wants to go over there. It's now cheeky and funny.
Well, it becomes Big Balls, or they did Big Balls and Crapsody in Blue about having crabs. I mean, it becomes all these Bon Scott tracks that are
exactly
just ridiculous, but also are, you know, kind of charming. He had a charm about it. All right. Well, okay, cool. Let's move on to category four. Our audience, Rico, they're on the edge of their seat. They, you know what? They're probably like, you know, feeling a little tipsy from all the eggnog at this point.
Could be. I hope they are anyway.
They're probably listening to us while they're wrapping their kids' presents. How about that?
That would be their best Christmas if they were doing that.
All right. Category four, Malignant Machismo. Rico, how do you score?
Yeah, man. I mean, if you're writing a tune about the Trumpster, you know, using his power and wealth in order to bed as many young nubile females as possible, that's got to score a one on the machismo scale, in my opinion. And I don't know if I have a whole lot more to add to that. What about you?
I agree. I'm going to give it a one as well. I mean, AC/DC, with remarkable consistency, even when they're writing about Donald Trump, somehow managed to write about Brian Johnson's ham candle.
That's a good point, man.
Don't know how they do it, but
that's a really good point.
As consistent as they are to three chords, a 4/4 beat, and the minor pentatonic, they are as laser focused on just writing songs about BJ's ham candle.
It, as if they don't have enough of them out there already. They have to keep adding to the list.
Yes.
I think maybe they do it just to see if they can create another one that's different from the other ones, just to see how many they can do, right?
You know how Rico Ebenezer Scrooge is visited by three ghosts who have to show him kind of his past, his present, and his future. In other words, they're forcing him to examine what he's put into the world, right?
That's correct.
Can you imagine a day when, like, you know, Brian Johnson or Angus Young are visited by three ghosts and they're forced to examine what they put into the world?
How do you respond to that? Jesus.
You have given the world 200 songs about Brian Johnson's ham candle.
I mean, first of all, you're referring to it as a ham candle is amazing, by the way. I don't know where I don't know if you invented that or where you picked that up from, but I love it.
I'm trying to be in the Christmas spirit. We light candles during the holidays.
And we eat ham.
And we eat. Well, maybe now I don't want to, now that you've fused the visual.
Yeah, when you slap that piece of ham on your plate, just remember this conversation. Merry fucking Christmas, Scott. No, man, like, God, if you're Brian Johnson and you're forced to look at yourself, how do you respond to that, man? Like, what do you do, dude? Do you do the victory pose and say, do you do the victory pose or do you like try and, I don't know, man. I kind of feel like the victory pose, like, yeah, you know what I mean?
Let's be honest. There's nothing more important to any man than his dick. And so, if given our way about it, we'd probably all happily pen song after song about our love affair with our own penises.
Yeah. I mean, if I could become a millionaire just by singing about my dick, why wouldn't I?
Listen, rich or poor, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Category 5. Let's wrap this mug up. Culture vulturism. Rico, how do you score? Mistress for Christmas, culture vulturism.
I mean, if you could give them a 1 for vulturing themselves, you easily could do that, because kind of like some of our other friends from Great Britain who do a lot of songs that all sound the same. I mean, it's your typical quintessential AC/DC song. However, it's AC/DC. So there is no such thing as vulturing yourself, right?
It's what they do. It's who they are.
What they do. CF&G, man. Like, you know, right?
Yeah. What are you going to give it?
I'm just 0. It's got to be, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I'm giving it a 0 as well. I mean, this is the only twist here is that they decided to write about, you know, a penis at Christmas time.
I mean, and that's and they called, what they call it, a flu pipe, yeah. A smoking flu pipe. I mean, that's pretty creative, right?
Yeah, I think the metaphor for this song was, what did they call it? They called it it's his smokestack, right?
Is it a smokestack?
Okay. Yeah, his Brian Johnson's Johnson in this instance is, you're coming down my smokestack. Yeah. I want to ride on your reindeer, honey, and ring my bells.
Ring my bells. Riding your reindeer.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, his last name is Johnson, so, I mean, maybe he feels right there obliged to live up to his namesake, right?
Oh, goodness. Do you like the song at all? On a side note, as
of just course I do. It's AC/DC. No, man. Like, I like AC/DC because they're simple, man. There's no, I don't have to think about it. I can just let her rip, and it's really easy to listen to. It's really simple. It's like, it's the easiest bluesy rock on the planet, and I love it. So no, I didn't struggle through this at all.
Yeah, I think it's actually a good song. I mean, I think it's one of the, I think this record has some filler on it, particularly in the back half, but this is one of the better tracks on the record, and it is a little bit of a risk for them. They did a Christmas song. I mean, what the fuck? So, you know, yeah, man, go AC/DC. Good track. All right, let's tally it up. What do we have here? Did AC/DC's Mistress for Christmas kill rock and roll? Rico, what total do you have, sir?
I have 3 points.
And I have 4 points for a total of, Rico, what's the total?
That is 7 points.
Oh, my.
Uh-oh. Well, you know what? It is what it is. The science never lies. Science works, man. They killed this song, killed rock and roll, right?
I mean, it kind of had to, right? I mean, it's yeah. I'm not surprised. I knew it was going to go that way. You know, this song is going to, it probably, if it ever received any radio airplay, it did not. It would probably be as despised as Baby It's Cold Outside, or whatever the fuck the song is called, that everybody's upset about.
I know. I am. Oh my God. OMG. Exclamation point. I can't believe how people are trying to cancel that song. I just want to say that. That's absolutely absurd. Getting canceled.
This song would go just about as far, I think. So the science does indeed work, because this song would suffer a similar fate, I suspect. Absolutely. If anybody paid attention to it.
And once people found out it was about Donald Trump, it sure the fuck wouldn't get any farther than it already has.
Yeah, I mean, people forget, like, back then he was just like celebrity guy. It was like no different than any other like 90s celebrity of the time. Dude was on Howard Stern like weekly back then.
Oh, I know. But you know, things are a little bit different back then. We had the corporate America was different, and corporate executives were celebrities, you know?
Yeah.
Not like that anymore.
Yep. Well, gang, thanks for listening in. Thanks for spending your holiday season, your holiday with Rock and Roll Autopsy.
Merry Christmas.
How do you feel about it, Rico? We did this show on a lark. You feel good about it?
I feel fantastico. What do you think?
Aside from the fact that we'll be posting it a week late, I think it'll be fine. Happy New Year, motherfuckers. How about that?
Yeah. MFers, don't make any fucking, what do they call it, New Year's resolutions, because none of you're gonna stick to them anyways.
Resolve to listen to more Rock and Roll Autopsy.
That's the best New Year's resolution I could ever think of.
Good night now.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah!
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
Guys, it was like a mistake. There's no mistake anymore.
I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNR Autopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.